interview with Gil Kingsbury, December 1, 1988, at his home in Fort Mitchell.
I thought I was getting a degree in journalism and found out it was a degree in economics, and I didn't care very much anyway. One was as good as the other as far as I'm concerned. I was born in Covington, back in Main Street. My mother was born in the same house. And my sister still lives there. I think the building must be 110 years old or something like that. My understanding was the second house on Main Street. I went to the local schools, graduated from Holmes High School in about 1927 and a half. And then I went to the University of Kentucky. And because I had to work my way through, it took me about, four and a half, 5 years. I graduated from there in 1933 and a half. I had a good time down there, joined fraternities. I was anxious to join anything. I was a sucker for that sort of stuff. Uh-huh. And any time they asked me, they invited me to join, all my question was, is how much? So I was elected to join ODK, Omicron Delta Kappa, which is a leadership fraternity, Phi Kappa Tau, which is a social fraternity, and I was a member of Sigma Delta Chi, which is a journalism fraternity down there. After I left the graduated from the University of Kentucky, was in depth of depression, graduated in February, had hoped to go to graduate school, but I actually didn't want to go to work. I don't like work. And so, but I couldn't, and I looked around for jobs, and finally I went into the Kentucky Post. Don Weaver was then the editor, and I violated all rules. I said, you don't need anybody, do you? And he said, as a matter of fact, we do. So I joined the Post and stayed there for about 4 or 5 years, maybe less than that, I don't know. And I was transferred to Cincinnati to the copy desk over there. In the Kentucky section, I did general assignment work and some headline writing and some makeup too. Then I went to Cincinnati and I worked on the copy desk over there. Enjoyed that. It was a whole lot different than it is today. I couldn't do it today. I know. I don't know the system. From there, I went to University of Cincinnati and worked up there as an assistant to the dean of the evening college. And I enjoyed that work, but it was not as exciting, nor as always demanding, yes. But it was not as interesting as news work. So then I was asked by an old boss from Cincinnati Post to join Crosley Broadcasting. So I went to Crosley Broadcasting and was there, I don't know how many years, but a good number of years. And during my career there, I became editor and editor of the newsroom and vice president of the company. They sent me to Washington. Being vice president of the company was in lieu of an increase in salary. Then they sent me to Washington, and I spent about 5 and a half years there from 1945 to 1951. I covered the Capitol and the Congress and the White House and various agencies wherever there was an Ohio Valley story that had to be reported. I was also a member of the Radio Television Correspondents Association. And during that time up there, they weren't as strict then. The news people weren't as strict about being aligned with a political party or political job. So I joined Earl Clements. I didn't join Earl Clements. When Earl Clements was elected governor of Kentucky, he had been, I knew then he was going to come to Congress at some time or other. However, I was invited to join. Clements named a man, Garrett Withers, to take the place of Alvin Barkley, and Alvin Barkley was elected vice president. So I worked for Garrett Withers, Senator Withers, for about a year and a half when his term expired, and Clements then became a senator. He ran, was elected to Senate. I worked for Earl Clements for about 2 years. He was a fine man, an excellent senator, but he was demanding, real demanding. He worked harder than anybody, and I didn't much like that type of work. Mm-hmm. So I finally resigned there and came back, well, actually, WLW, McCarthy Broadcasting Company, was then going to television, and they needed money, so they abolished all their periphery activities, and I came back to Cincinnati, and was the vice president of Crosley Broadcasting until I resigned from that place and went into business for myself around the community, public relations, and things of that sort. That, in essence, is all I've done, and I'm now living here. I lived in Fort Mitchell, lived in this home for 37 years, except for 3 years. Yes, I did forget that. I went to the University of Kentucky and joined their staff down there. Then I came back home, and here I am today. I have a wife and one child. It's Bill Kingsbury Jr., D.W. Kingsbury Jr., and he lives in Atlanta now, and he's in planning and development, city planning and development. He has two children, a boy and a girl. The girl's in school at Emory University. The boy's in high school in the Atlanta area. And he has a wife who is in real estate down there. They enjoy it. I wish they were closer here.
Can you describe some of the highlights of your career with Crosley Broadcasting?
Yes.
Some of the things you saw.
Yeah, although I only lived in Washington about 5.5 years, 6 years maybe, I went back and forth to Washington representing Crosley Broadcasting about, every 2 or 3 months. And I enjoyed being there. I covered the first convention I covered was the Truman Convention. I covered Dewey and Truman Convention in Philadelphia. It was held in the same place, and I was chairman of the Independent Broadcasters Committee. In other words, I certified, with the help of other people, of course, those who could cover the conventions. I covered also the conventions out in Chicago, and the conventions in Los Angeles and in San Francisco, and I covered about 20 years there. The San Francisco convention, I think, if I remember correctly, was one who nominated, I've forgotten who they nominated. I think I got the scrapbooks over here.
That was one of the presidential?
That's right, presidential conventions, nominating conventions.
Uh-huh.
I had an unusual thing happened. I was covering a convention in Los Angeles, a Democratic convention, and I also covered the Republican convention there. The Democratic convention, I was, of course, familiar with the Kentucky delegation, having worked with a lot of them, knew a lot of them, and they needed another vote, needed another delegate. So they said, Earl Clements, who was senator then, he said, Kingsbury, you're a delegate. I said, I can't. I'm working for the broadcasting, for news. He said, I don't care. You're a delegate. So I became a delegate to that convention. I remember going to see Kennedy right afterwards. Our side was for Lyndon Johnson. But after it was over, after the nomination came, one of the fellows at the convention as a delegate from Kentucky had been for Kennedy, so he took us all down to Kennedy's apartment. I've forgotten the hotel in Washington, in Los Angeles, and we met him there, not for the first time, as I'd covered him, but we met him as a nominee then, and he impressed all of us, as he'd impressed a lot of people. Okay, let's see.
Talking about Kennedy, I think.
Yes, it was right nice. Of course, I'd seen him in action in the Senate, and it was right nice to see him. Under those circumstances, we had to make our amends, was we had opposed him in the convention, except some of our delegates, though, supported Kennedy all the way through. That was one of the highlights, I guess. another highlight perhaps was my work with Alvin Barkley. I knew him, of course, when he came a campaign around here. Well, I sort of took care of him in a sense, got his cars and made his appointments for him and things like that. And I remember one thing about him. We had no motels over here to speak of. They weren't the type of motels that Barkley would stay. Not he didn't have any choice of us. So we had him stay over in Neyland Plaza in Cincinnati. And I remember the Kentucky people who were on his side gave him a great big basket of fruit, and then there was a basket, it was a shot of old granddad. Well, he was packing up in the hotel, getting ready to leave, and I thought, well, that's fruit there and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to get some of that. Barkley took the whiskey and all the hard fruit and left the grapes and the bananas in the basket. Oh, damn that thing. Let's see, where was I?
Alvin Barkley.
Alvin Barkley, yes. Well, then when he was nominated for vice president, they assigned me to, when I say they assigned me, the leadership of the party assigned me to take care of him, watch over him, and arrange for his programming, his interviews, and I did that. He was easy to get along with. He liked to talk anyway. He had a charming wife. It was his second wife. And one guy who from Cincinnati, another radio station, who thought I would try to chisel him, keep him interviewing Barkley, because I was from Crosley Broadcasting. He was from another station. Well, I had to play square with him. I was going to play square with him. Anyways, my job to see Barkley got as much coverage as possible. So the guy resented it. And I took him in to see Barkley, and when I introduced him to the senator, while I walked out and let him do it, well, I think I convinced him it wasn't going to play any tricks on him or anything like that. Another problem I had with him, too, at another convention, I was assigning space for the independent broadcasting groups. The NBC, the networks had their own, and those stations that wanted to cover it individually, maybe covering the local delegate or local official. I was assigning spaces. This was in Philadelphia this time. And I assigned spaces, and I got one of my own, and then he was to follow me. And he didn't like that very much. It didn't make much difference if I was recording the stuff anyway. So after I moved my equipment, or our engineers moved the equipment, he moved on in, and I left. And I understand he was determined to keep that. He was not going to give it up. And he stayed most of the night. He was the last one in there. And nobody came to claim the spot. So I suppose about 1, 2 o'clock, he got tired and went home.
I see. Were you in charge of the Kentucky the delegation for the state of Kentucky?
No, I was not. I helped them because of my contacts in Washington.
Uh-huh.
I helped them do some things, but my broadcasting thing took precedent over anything else because I was working for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I was chairman of the independent group. The networks had their own chairman. I was chairman of the independent group of stations who were going to cover it in addition to what they might get from the network. And that was my sole job, and I didn't pass on them. If they applied, it was an honest-to-God station, and they got the space. And that was all. It was really rather routine.
Mm-hmm. You had connections with these independent broadcasters and with, yeah, Alvin Barkley?
Yes, that's right. And, we're Earl Clements and with all the Kentucky delegation people, and Ohio, too.
So at this national convention, you helped to seat the journalists?
Yeah, that's right, the broadcast journalists people. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Was no great problem, because in those days, most of the stations around the country, except for the wealthier ones, like Crosley Broadcasting, couldn't afford to send up an equipment with a crew up there and stuff like that. So we didn't have too many at that time. Now today, I understand, the last time, I think this just the convention just passed, they had 3,000 accredited. And I think we probably had maybe 200 or 300, and that was all.
Let me get this again. Now, this is seating for the Barkley,
yeah, the
section?
Pressure. No. It's for everything.
The whole country?
Yeah, the whole country, yeah. I happened to be working for Barkley I wasn't working for him, I was for him.
So you were helping to seat for the whole country
oh,
at the
yes,
convention?
Oh, yes, that's right.
The whole convention?
That's right.
And how many journalists did you say there were?
Well, the independent people, I suppose they were just 300 or 400.
And did you help seat the national tour? Or were they?
All national convention.
How many were there?
About 300 or 400. Not that many.
So about 800 altogether?
Yeah, I'll say that they shouldn't have done this, but we didn't watch closely enough to see that only those working press got in. Lots of times someone back home in Podunk would say, I'm going to convention, can you give me press credentials? And so the broadcast people got them press credentials, so they really wandered around. All it assured him was a seat. Mm-hmm. The first convention, I think it was in Chicago, and Crosley Broadcasting covered it on radio, and we couldn't get a seat like the networks do, right above the crowd. So what we did, we pulled in a television set and put it in a cubicle back in the background, and Peter Grant, who worked for Crosley Broadcasting at that time, we turned on the television set, and Peter Grant broadcast by looking at the set. He was about 50 more feet from the floor, but he did it during that way. That's the way. Later on, he got spaces.
What year would this be? Do you recall?
I've forgotten. It was Chicago Convention. I know that, but I've forgotten.
You don't
know
which.
It was Chicago Convention.
Was it one of Roosevelt's terms or?
No. I came after Roosevelt.
You come after?
Yeah. I came after when Truman.
Was the Truman Convention where he beat Dewey?
I didn't do it. That did that the convention in Chicago, where this escapes me which one it was. Who was nominated? Must have been on the Democratic side. The guy from Illinois.
Stevenson.
Adlai Stevenson. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that was the one in Chicago.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about seating for Barclay, or with you're involved with Barclay, that was the one with Truman. That was the one.
Yeah,
with Truman.
Yeah, that's right. I was involved with that one with the Truman administration, but I was more deeply involved with Barclay and when he ran and was whipped by Stevenson didn't whip him. What was Chicago Convention, too? Now, who won that convention?
Let's see, it was Truman, Stevenson, Kennedy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in Chicago, because I remember going to the hotel across from the street where Barclay had his home, as we were saying here. It must have been. I've forgotten. Maybe the scrapbook will remind me of it.
Who were the political people in Northern Kentucky at that time that you knew of?
Jimmy Dressman, Al Wood, Jim Ware. Jim Ware and I served in the General Assembly. He was a senator and I was in the House. And the former mayor who's dead now, John Maloney. And Bernie Eichholz, he's not in town anymore. And they were the ones that I worked with more closely than anybody else.
At these four or five conventions?
They worked. I worked with them here.
Mm-hmm. Back home?
Back home. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I'd forgotten who the delegates were to the conventions up there. There'd been four of them, four different ones, and they all runs together.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Truman, Stevenson, and Kennedy. Those four.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Okay. And you don't recall who the local people were who went to these conventions offhand?
Yeah. Many of them are dead now. We had a sheriff, former sheriff here, and his wife, they were up there. The sheriff's name. I forgot that, but I remember her picture of the woman, his wife, appeared on Life magazine. And he was smoking a cigar.
Sheriff of Kenton County?
Yeah, Sheriff of Kenton County. What was his name? I've forgotten that. That's been about, more than 20 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
It may come across in this stuff here.
Do you remember Sylvester Wagner?
Oh, sure. Sir Wagner, yeah.
Did he ever go to the National Convention?
Not to my knowledge.
He was a local.
Yeah, local. Yeah, I know Sylvester. He was a member of a house down there, I believe, at one time.
Uh-huh. I think his wife died just last week or something.
Was that right?
I think so.
I didn't know that.
He's dead, I believe.
He hasn't said yet.
Do you think of anybody else? You mentioned Eichholz and Ware and
Jimmy Dressman, Al Wood, another one, Andy Clark, John Maloney, Bud Dieters. That's the Dieters, Charlie Dieters. That's Charlie, who's in law, it's his father. His father was on the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
He was a rival of mine when we worked on the post. He was an Inquirer and worked on the post. And we were all on the same side of the fence politically, though. We're just competitors in news work, that was all.
Mm-hmm.
And over in Campbell County, Jim, oh, there was a sheriff over there. Jim's last name. There's a lot of Campbell Countyans, too.
Mm-hmm.
Commonwealth attorney over there, one of the judges. They were in Ogden, Keith over hearings in Washington.
Did you know Yuli Hard?
Yeah, yeah, he lived right up the street here, on the hill.
Was he involved in that? Anything that you were involved with?
No. He was
a local Democratic leader. Was that before you?
No, it was while I was on the newspaper. Yuli Hard was he was a Democratic leader, yes, he was, but it was before I was involved in politics. He died. I knew him fairly well. He was involved with the people I didn't approve of.
Mm-hmm.
He was. That's when we had wide open
gambling
in Northern Kentucky. Go ahead.
You said that you got involved in politics through Earl. Did you say you got involved through Earl Clemens? Did you say that?
Yes and no. I was involved in politics before that. I was involved in politics when a group of young people, including Jimmy Dressman and Al Wood and others I've mentioned, Andy Clark, decided we would oppose the people we were in. We didn't like the gambling in Northern Kentucky. And so I got involved then with them. And then when Clements was running, I knew him favorably, and he called me up. My probably was his man up here as far as patronage goes. And after Clements came Garrett Withers, and then Joaquin Johnson was before that. Ned Breathitt, Bert Combs, and Lawrence Weatherby, Henry Ward, who was never governor, he was candidate for governor against Chandler. I was on the side against Chandler. And I think good many of Clements is dead, Weatherby's still alive. Ward is still alive. And the others are all dead. Well, Ward would be still living too. Well, I never thought they were.
You say you and Jim Ware and Jim Dressman,
yeah,
and these guys opposed gambling. Did you have any other particular outlook, political outlook as a group?
No, except when we got involved in that, why we decided we'd like to go a step further. Have people run for office in our group. And we did, and they were elected. And some of them, like Al Wood is still doing it. Jimmy Dressman, just I quit it last year, maybe about 2 years ago, something like that. And Jim Ware, he served in the state Senate, was the majority leader, was president pro tem of the Senate, which meant he was third in line for the presidency, for the governorship. And when the governor, lieutenant governor, left the state, when Jim became governor for about 4 or 5 days and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we had a real good time. And I broke up, and I've forgotten when I broke up. I think most of us got tired.
Most of you got tired?
Yeah, I think so.
Did you succeed pretty much in giving gambling a bad name or breaking the hold of gambling interests?
I hope that was the case, although I've got to say that we got some help from the state, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the federal government was starting to look into them, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed the other day. I thought about the other day how they had handbooks all around town at the time. And those guys really ran the community.
Mm-hmm.
And now the state does the same damn thing at the racetracks.
Mm-hmm.
All over. You can bet on Churchill Downs or the track at Lexington. The track there's one at Paducah and one at Henderson, Kentucky. You can bet on up at the racetrack here.
Mm-hmm.
In other days, you had to go to a quiet joint and put your bets down. There's one thing I probably resented, didn't resent the betting so much, I resented their hold on the community.
Mm-hmm.
I remember living in Latonia for a while, saw a couple of old ladies walking down the street, and someone, they'd been to the grocery store, the handbook was in the back,
mm-hmm.
and someone said, "Mrs. Smith, how do you do?" She said, "I didn't do any, I lost $1.25. You can't deny a woman or anybody $1.25. If they'd have just kept their nose clean and hadn't gotten too big trying to run a community, they'd probably have been no longer be here today. I don't know, though. We had one interesting situation. You may have heard of it. Al Wood ran a dry cleaning place out in Latonia.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a meeting there one night. It was in his basement. And Ned Breathitt came up. And Ned was going over to see some political leader over in Campbell County. And I don't know if it was raining or what it was, but he got to the dry cleaning plant, Al Wood, and there was about, maybe 15, 20 of us there meeting in the basement. And Al turned on the machinery, pressed Ned's pants and his coat and everything like that. But what happened, have you heard that story?
No.
Carbon monoxide got us.
Yeah.
We all staggered out there and they carried us, some carried some of us out and some of us went to the hospital down to St. Elizabeth, that much down to St. Elizabeth North, down in Covington. And I passed that and they got me out of the basement there and they finally discovered what it was. All the use of the equipment in the laundry there exhausted all the air and just carbon monoxide left. And we had about, I guess, 5 or 10 of them went to the hospital. I didn't go to the hospital, but somebody came by and picked me up and I came home. But I remember waking me up on the floor in the basement down there saying, "Gil, Gil, Gil, let's get out of here."
Was this because of the machinery plus all the people there at one time? Is that?
I guess that was it. I don't know. They said it was carbon monoxide, and I suppose it was.
It was more than a coincidence, so that it happened while you were there, right?
No, I don't think so.
You think that was a coincidence?
No, it was not a coincidence.
It was because there were so many people there, right?
That's right, and the equipment was turned on to press breakfast pants and cook. So you go to the meeting over in Campbell County, look all right. So they called ambulances and everything. I recall I went on home, but others had to go to the hospital. Some of the older ones were not seriously ill, but it took a toll on them for a few days.
Can you describe, you said the gambling people had a hold on the county. Can you describe that a little bit further, what you remember about that? Or
they supported people who would look the other way, mm-hmm. and they supported him with money, mm-hmm. and campaigning too, and they did a good job. I think the Kefauver thing stopped them a bit, slowed them up a little bit, and then our group was able to elect people who were opposed to the gambling operation. Mm-hmm. It didn't always work. The people who were opposed were not perhaps not aggressive enough, and frankly, I think there were too many handbook operators in town. It was this town was, as far as that goes, was wide open. Mm-hmm. But it was an interesting time anyway.
Mm-hmm. It was people trying to preserve gambling, but also trying to make a lot of money, not just...
That's right, that's right. They were
make as much money as
yeah,
they can.
That's right, mm-hmm. and did, too. Mm-hmm. And some of the officials, I didn't see the money pass, but you'd always tell what happened. If a case was dropped, you know somebody was passed the money. Mm-hmm. And the rest was... The trial was never called, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So it was a matter of bribery and...
Payoffs.
Yeah,
I don't think they called it bribery. Yeah. It was payoffs. Mm-hmm. Look the other way, fellas, and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
It was corrupting elections and corrupting businesses.
Yeah,
and
that's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a bad reputation, particularly statewide.
You say Northern Kentucky?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Henderson had a lot of that, too. A little bit in Owensboro. There were some in Louisville. But I think Northern Kentucky, because of the Cincinnati area, because of Cincinnati, we probably had more of it here than the others did, although Louisville had quite a bit. But you can't stop a Kentuckian from betting if he wants to.
Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about the lottery, of course.
Yeah.
So your group didn't necessarily oppose gambling on religious grounds. It was just a matter of the corruption.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. Corruption of officials. I suppose that relates to religion, too.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to see our community laughed at all over the state. And we didn't get an awful lot of help from church people. I think they were afraid to move in on it or something like that. I don't know what it was. We may have got moral support, but no other. Well, maybe we did, because we elected people, too. Someone, somewhere along the line, the movement was supported. I think we have a pretty good community right now. There may be some books, but I doubt it. If they are, they don't make much of a living. When you go to the track and bet on all horses and around, they can run. I have no objection to that either.
Was there any kind of a organized a betting organization in the area?
No, just word of mouth.
Word of mouth and informal?
Informal. Uh-huh. I remember one time we a state Democratic convention, I guess it was, Kentucky Post photographer was down there, and he took pictures. And he's some sitting in front, and there's guys in the back. And I turned around, the picture was snapped, to shake hands with the guy in back of me. I didn't know who he was. The picture showed up at one of the gambling joints. And someone came to me and said, "Kingsbury, I thought you were against these operations up here." And I said, "Yeah, well," I said, "what are you shaking hands with that guy for?" I didn't know who he was. You can sure get trapped in something.
Yeah.
But those days are over, and I'm glad of it. We got a better community, but I think we got a long way to go to revitalize downtown business and mm-hmm. things of that sort.
Can you describe when you feel like the era of gambling, that type of era of gambling ended? What about was that, would you say?
I would say it was probably under the Clements Combs administration. I think it was phased out. I don't know. The heat was on, I know that. And I think the federal government moved in on them, too.
Was this during Kennedy's or before Kennedy?
Before Kennedy.
Before Kennedy. Kefauver and all that, right?
Yeah, I guess Kefauver had a voice, and I never did like Kefauver. Uh-huh. I didn't like these other kids, but
I remember when Keith Faber was doing his investigation to all these Northern Kentucky people up there, we had one guy up there who was, he was working for the federal government as a usher or something, but bookkeeper over the center of the house. He was out there, he knew all these guys, and he was out there busy helping them call cabs and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead now. And, they knew their way around. And I remember one time, the Commonwealth attorney from Newport was there to testify before the Kefauver Committee, and he couldn't get a room. I don't know. And one of the gamblers said, well, here, I testified, and I've forgotten the gambler's name, he's from Newport. Here, I've testified. I'm going to check out. Here's the key. Why don't you check out tomorrow for me? He tossed the key to the Commonwealth attorney. And they were buddies all along. But we have a better community, I think, because of that group. That was a long, long time ago now.
Can you separate, like the national type of gambling figures from the locals in any particular way? Can you kind of classify or contrast them? Their style of gambling or their...
Their style wasn't as... they had to be connected with the network of gamblers, but then they had to get the race results. So in that sense, they were connected. But I don't think that there was no payoff to any national or even statewide figures, in my estimation, in my belief. I think they were all in it for themselves. They contributed to a great many things in the community, money-wise. So that made friends for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of any national connection, except maybe with the wire services.
What about the syndicate wife type of gambling figures? Were these connected with them?
No, I'll tell you, look, outhouse in Beverly Hills were the syndicate people,
mm-hmm.
out of Cleveland and around the country, and they had... I had never been in the back rooms of those places, and I wouldn't know except I knew them by sight, knew what they did. And I remember one time, Lookout House, then Fort Wright, that's the community,
yeah.
And they wanted a road built, Fort Wright people did, and the gamblers said they couldn't get it built. They were had the inns in Frankfort. Well, I knew that wasn't so. So I called up the highway commissioner at the time, and I said, this was about this time of the year, I believe, maybe a little earlier in the fall. And I said, these guys are going to murder us. The people in this community, Fort Wright, is against Lookout House. They're going to vote for the other side if we don't do something about it. He said, well, what can we do? The correct construction season is about over. And I said, well, we'll move a couple pieces of equipment over here on the road. And they did. So Fort Wright officials said, see, we're going to get our road. The equipment's over there. Well, as soon as the election was over, they took the equipment away. But they couldn't use it until spring. They did build the road. It's I don't know if you're familiar with the Fort Wright Civic Building.
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, that was a road that they wanted built.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some friends on this Fort Wright board that wanted me to do something about it.
Did you say the gamblers did not want to build it?
No, they didn't mind building it at all. But they said that the present state administration wouldn't build it for them. They had to go to somebody else and get somebody else to do it, that the present administration wouldn't do it. So that's when we moved, asked them to move some equipment up.
Mm-hmm. When you were involved with that, asking them to move the equipment, what was your position then?
A person they could come to and talk to about the situation here, what could be done, what can't be done, everything like that, who should get the job. If somebody wanted a job, they'd call me up and say, this guy all right, is he for us, and stuff and that sort. Just patronage.
Doing this as a journalist or as a...
No.
As a citizen?
One who didn't like the reputation my community had.
Mm-hmm.
I had friends all over the state that went to university, And every time they'd say, hey, how you guys up there in Covington doing? Those guys still running the rackets up there? You know, that sort of thing. The only other place that did that was in Henderson, Kentucky, in Owensboro a little bit. But they got those, that cleared up, too.
Again, now, you would separate the local gambling operations, the local gambling in the back saloons and all that, from the syndicate wife type gambling.
Yeah.
That was a different thing, right?
Yeah, it's a different thing, except, of course, to get the race results and things like that, they had to tap into the wire.
Uh-huh.
And in that sense, they were, but they weren't, they did. My family on Main Street had a house two doors away from one handbook. Didn't bother them a bit. They were good people, too. But it was against the law. And I didn't like the way they were keeping good men from office. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the situation with the rest of us. We weren't Puritans or anything like that, but we just didn't like the fact that they were running things. And not running very well, either.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they didn't care as long as they could do their own operations.
Now, at this time, in general, it was against the law to have a gambling operation in a grocery store, or
no? They it wasn't. In fact, in a grocery store, it could be in a shoe store, candy store,
saloon. It was legal.
Yeah. It wasn't legal. No, it wasn't legal.
It was
at all.
Illegal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all illegal.
It was all illegal.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. It was all on the books as illegal.
Yeah, but
it went on anyhow.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose there's some cities in the United States still do it. But I don't think we have it here. There may be books around, but I'm not aware of them.
But in general, this type of gambling was outright illegal throughout this era.
Yeah, that's right.
It wasn't. It wasn't
sanctioned by law or anything.
Mm-hmm. Our gambling today, though, is more the kind that is sanctioned at the racetracks, anyhow.
Yeah, actually, there were some money, big money bet, but I think mostly it was minor stuff. Except it's so widespread that they had to have some outside connections. Some of the outside connections had their offices in town here, their clearinghouse. You know, there's a place at Fifth and Madison. There's a drugstore there and a lot of restaurants. It's a great big tall building. Definitely the building has some history to it.
Oddfellows, you mean?
Yeah.
The Oddfellows?
Yeah, I think it was...
Northeast corner?
Yeah, that's right. The clearinghouse was upstairs there.
Mm-hmm.
That building. Mm-hmm.
That was what kind of a clearinghouse? Now, was not a syndicate wife clearinghouse.
Whether it was or not, I don't know. But they had to clear some of the bullies got bets were too heavy for him to carry, and he wanted to clear them off, share them with somebody, so they go to the clearinghouse would do it.
But would you say this clearinghouse was a local type thing, or did it have a national?
I think it had to have national connections. There was nobody locally could have covered the problem.
But you don't know that it was the same people as who ran Newport, so to speak, or anything like that?
Oh, there were connections, yes. Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
They did some smart things. People, I guess this goes back to the days that Romans liked entertainment. So the Kentucky Post had a weekly concert in the summertime in the Loop Park, an amphitheater. Have you seen that up there?
Yes, sir.
Well, they had entertainment over there, and if they wanted a crowd out, they'd go to Lookout House and say, send us over. One of your girls, men, sing, dance, and stuff like that, and they came over just about a quarter of a mile away, one of the morning, I guess. And the big crowds, 25,000 people would turn out and see these people entertain. And they were damn good. It was good public relations for the operator. They had Sophie Tucker and, I can't recall all the names of them. They were there, all right. It was an interesting time in the county.
In general, then again, these local gambling was pretty much on just everywhere. It was blanket. The area's blanketed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Out in the county, as well as in town.
Yes.
Are there any names that stick out in your mind in this era? You were on the reform side, but the other side, or other people, third parties that you can think of, stick out?
I can't off the top of my head. They were all associated, so I understand. I have no way of knowing, with the Cleveland operations. And I can't think. Wouldn't have been called to Washington to testify before the Keyflower Committee if they hadn't had some national ties. But I don't think anybody around here went to jail. I don't recall anybody.
You say the local clergy did not, did you say they did not help, for instance, the clergy did not help that much in this cleanup?
Some did and some didn't. I don't think they were particularly effective, although they were always present, making their voice heard, but I don't think they were effective.
That would be like the Protestant Ministers Association.
Yeah, that's
maybe
right.
Maybe the bishops.
Yeah, that's right. They all condemned it.
Officially, they condemned it.
Yes, that's right.
But they didn't really get involved in the...
I don't know where they knew how. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they knew how.
So it was really the people involved in Democratic politics.
Yeah, but there's much... Well, there's not much of a Republican Party at that particular time.
So these are the people who, on a local level, plus the state level and the federal level.
I think the federal level was effective by maybe pressuring the state on how they did it. I can't recall. Mm-hmm.
Is there any governor that stands out in your mind in this cleanup gambling? Anyone that was particularly effective, or was it just a gradual process?
I think that the Earl Clements, although I don't think the gamblers would agree with that, Earl Clements had a part in it. And what the part was, I am not aware of. It was during his administration and Lawrence Weatherby. I think they started closing down. Closing down and maybe discouraged them or stuff like that. I don't know. I really don't know. Have you talked to Jim Ware?
Well, I talked to him, but not about gambling, about the gambling reform. So what it was is people got elected who started enforcing the existing law.
That's right, that's right.
And people who weren't enforcing the laws were made to enforce them, I guess, right?
So I think by the election of new people to office. We elected a mayor and a sheriff and other people. But I'm glad that's all over now.
While we're on this Earl Clements, can you describe what you remember about him? Especially as pertains to Northern Kentucky or his personality?
He had a real personality. He was a fighter. He was a football player at the University of Kentucky, and the only thing that ever made him mad, he was also ROTC. When he graduated, he was put on the ROT staff at the university, and he couldn't get out of the country. He had to stay there all the time. He was working as an officer. He was a battler, a real battler. He's a hard worker, one of the hardest workers I've ever known. He took over Lyndon Johnson's job when Lyndon Johnson got sick, and he did, I think, a magnificent job. He was I liked him personally. I knew him real, real well, I thought. And a lot of people who didn't know him as well as I did didn't like him very much. But any time a person was ill, had bad luck, or anything like that, Earl Clements would help him. But you'd never know it for maybe months and years later that Earl Clements had done this thus and so for a person. And you'd tell him when he found out what he did, he'd get mad. He didn't want to be reminded of it. Only a few people knew him like that, but I did. He was a hard campaigner, a really tough campaigner. His daughter married Drew Pearson's son, stepson. So they live in Washington now.
Can you describe his political stances in general, or his outlook during his time?
Well, in specific things, yes. State parks. He thought tourism was an answer to some of the ills in Kentucky. It was. Back in those days, the local political leadership, the state parks were where they met every week or something like that. And they were his friends. He threw them out. He put state parks on a paying basis for all the people. He knew it could bring an awful lot of money to Kentucky. But it had to be cleared up. And he went real, real far in doing it. He also was a good school man. He wanted education for the people of Kentucky. He did that. He and Chandler never did get along. As far as I was concerned, that was good for Earl Clements. He never liked... Well, they didn't like one another.
Is it over political ideas?
Yeah.
Not personality?
That's right. Well, their personalities were different, too, but it was political. Clements and Lawrence Weatherby did what he could. The groundwork was laid by Clements. I think Jim... I was in Washington doing a good bit of this time, and I think Jim could... Talking about, because he was close to, not to Clements, but to others down there.
You were in Washington during the...
during the Truman administration.
Truman administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from 45 to 51, and then I went back, and I covered all the conventions, including the convention on that guy was shot. We just celebrated the Mark.
Kennedy?
Yeah, Kennedy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, from Truman all the way up through Kennedy.
Yes.
What was Crosby Broadcasting like as far as Northern Kentucky goes?
Not very cognizant of Northern Kentucky, in spite of the fact that the president of the company, Jim Schaus, was from Fort Thomas, Wartsville, Bellevue, but they didn't pay too much attention. The local papers were, Cincinnati paper, about alike, same thing. No one paid attention to Northern Kentucky. I forced them or led them to pay some attention to Northern Kentucky. They had a good many people over there working for them. They had very few in the newsroom outside of me from Northern Kentucky. And now of course, you got to remember too that WLW was called the Nation Station and didn't pay too much attention to anything local. It was national. But I think I helped Crosby Broadcasting pay some attention to Northern Kentucky. And I think people knew that I did. Jim Schatz was named, as an honorary degree from the University of Kentucky, and that didn't hurt. And of course, he was Kentuckian to begin with. And they had a lot of Kentuckians. Mary Wood, Kentuckian. And there were others over there. And I think that I hope I helped Crosley Broadcasting, WLW and WLWT, to recognize the potential of Northern Kentucky. To their listening audience, it was money in the bank.
Did Crosley ever have an office over here in Northern Kentucky?
No. You mean a newsroom?
Yeah.
News office? No. It's only in recent years they did that.
Mm-hmm. What were your years at Crosley again?
1945 to about 1961.
61.
Something like that.
So you were in Washington and then you...
Came back here. I was with Crosley before I went to Washington. I've forgotten what year I went to Crosley Broadcasting.
You were in Washington.
I lived in Washington for 6 years. Five and a half, 6 years. And then I went back to Washington about twice a month for the next 7, 8 years.
Mm-hmm. What'd you do on these trips?
I'd line up people to appear on the air, Crosley Broadcasting, Taft, Eisenhower before he became president, and Keith Aubrey, and of course the local people always wanted to get on Crosley Broadcasting, was giving the local audience. And we had a show over there, I don't know what it's, I think it's still on, called The World Front.
Mm-hmm.
And I lined up people for that show too. We had one guy, what was his name? Bob Considine.
Mm-hmm.
This is an anecdote, not important. He came just after he'd written 20 Seconds Over Tokyo. He came over to Crosley to be on his World Front show. And he had a check for $2,000. Now, that was a big sum of money in those days. We went across the street to the Slim after the show was over to get a drink. Jack Abrams, who was a Democratic ward healer for that area, we always trying to play tricks on Jack. And we said to Jack, he didn't know Considine, we said, can you cash a check for this guy? And we were trying to kid him. And he said, well, if you guys say he's all right, I'll cash it. So he gave him a $2,000 check. He said, how do you want it? he cashed a check for all the people at Crosley Square, run over to Jack's, get their checks cashed, have a drink or so.
Was it Crosley Field, Fairs, Square is where it is right now?
Yeah, that's right. And then a saloon across the street, and I don't know who runs it now. That guy was the Democratic boss for that area down there. Jack Abrams, that's what his name.
Right across from Izzy's there.
That's right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right across from the first Izzy Cadet's place.
Right? Yeah, I guess Jack's been dead a long time. He's an old man.
Did you say you brought Eisenhower and these people to Cincinnati to appear?
No. I got them from Washington. Mm-hmm. From Washington. Oh, some I brought to Cincinnati, yes, but I can't. It was not Eisenhower, I know that.
Yeah.
Clarence Brown, you don't remember him, I guess. He was a long, long time. He's a Taft man from Blanchester, Ohio. And he owned a radio station newspaper up there. We got him on air quite a lot. I got Bradley, Governor General Bradley. He was on the air. But see, that's when I was in Washington. They'd just come down to the Washington studio and get on the air. And no problem then. Mm-hmm. But very few of them came out to Cincinnati unless they were on their way out or something like that. So we had Keith Lover on and Bradley on. I remember was Southern Congressman. I can't even recall. If I can recall, I wonder what they did.
Did you broadcast from Washington, or was
yeah,
it taped?
Yeah, no, broadcast studio. Huh?
No, it didn't. It wasn't taped.
It wasn't taped.
It was broadcast.
No, wait. I did a broadcast every night. every night from live from Washington. And we had the studio, and we rented the studio actually from another station. Mm-hmm. And we had I used to bring him into the studio and do a, make a recording in Cincinnati. They made the recording in Cincinnati. The line was open, so they make the recording in Cincinnati. But generally speaking, most of these guys, like the Bradleys and stuff like that, Keith Lovers, they were live. Mm-hmm. But we had a lot of other people out, not of the congressional status or anything like that. But people who were doing something in the greater Cincinnati area or in the tri-state area. Mm-hmm.
Getting back to one thing relates to gambling, did you know anything about price fixing and investigations in a local area?
No.
Interstate? Did you know anything about local big business in Northern Kentucky with connections in Washington or anything like that? Say during, well, you came in after World War II, then. You don't know anything about the World War II administration?
No.
In the local area? Federal administration?
The only thing I know about the Newport Steel Mill. It's a funny more than anything else. I don't think it's important. I had a friend who lived on the Kentucky side, on the Covington side of the Licking River. And he called me up one night. He was madder than hell. Either the mill or the federal government was driving piles into the ground to keep the ground from slipping. Mm-hmm. And it was making a hell of a noise. I didn't know it, but he was mad at me. He wanted me to call up and get him stopped. He put the phone out the window and I could hear the pounding. Mm-hmm. And I tried to calm him down, told him I'd take care of it. I couldn't take care of it. But I satisfied him. Stuff like that, you know, raising hell about things.
This is after 61, after you left Crosley?
Before 61. No, while I was still working with Crosley.
Oh. Okay.
No, they called me at home. I live over in Virginia.
Over where?
In Virginia. Across the river from, across the Potomac.
Oh.
In the suburbs.
You say they called you?
At my home.
Yeah, from Kentucky.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to stop that noise over there.
So as a journalist, you got a lot of what you might call political requests, or
And particularly if they knew me and they'd call me up and ask me to do something about it, and I would if I could. I was probably nothing political involved in it. It was just I remember one day getting a call from the boss of the Crosley Square. I was in the office of their attorneys. Just chatting. This call came from Jim Shouse, the president of Crosley, and he said he'd like to have copies of House Bill such and such and such and such. And he said, the attorney said, House Bill what? And he put their dumb name, number, House Bill such and such and such and such. And I said, I'll get it for him, Brady. He said, Jesus Christ, Jim, you don't want a whole hell of a lot, do you? And when he hung up, I said, Fred, I'll get that for you. He signed off, but no use telling them that. And then one time in a car with a cab, a guy wanted a copy of the hearings. One of the guys from the president of Crosley Broadcasting wanted a copy of one of the hearings. And he wrote up the Capitol, Fred and I, and the officer from Crosley Square, wrote up, and I knew before he won a copy of some of the hearings. And I went, I said, all right, let me out here, I'll get it. So I went up and got it, walked, it didn't let me out the Capitol. It left me out the Senate office building. I went through the tunnel, went up the Capitol, third floor, something like that. So give me a copy of such and such hearing. Take it on down, and for the attorney, he said, don't say anything. We drove away from the place. He said, did you get it? I said, yeah. He said, give it to me. He said, Jim, you got it. But he could have gone out and asked for it himself. But the attorney's up there, I don't know. He's dead now. He was a good friend of mine, but, oh.
He's kind of paranoid about the...
No, he just wanted to be a big shot. Huh. Making things that anybody could got. But nobody back home here knew what you could get. Just walk up to the window there. We had a place there where you had all copies of bills and hearings and stuff like that. If you wanted one, needed one, just tell them, Hospital 388, the hearing on it. They go and give it to you. That's all. They ask you what you want it for, why you want it. But people out here don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fooled by stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into another one like that. Bear Bryant was at the University of Kentucky then. He called up and wanted me to go out and see a football prospective football player. And he said, now don't offer him any money. And I went out to see him, and boy wasn't there. He was out playing softball or something like that. And I talked to his parents and everything of that sort. And I said, what's he doing this summer? Well, he's working for a firm of radio attorneys. And sure enough, it was Crosley Broadcasting. He was an office boy. So I went down, didn't think much more about it. I said, Fred, what are you keeping this kid from going to a good school, kidding him? And he said, he said, the kid's going to George Washington University. And I came down and said, what are you keeping that kid from going to good University of Kentucky? He's going to George Washington. He said, oh, I don't know. Hell, that kid's down here. We pay him $50 a week. That was money in those days.
Yeah.
He was an office boy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he did play football for him for 2 years, and then George Washington quit football for him. But that's the way things work out over there. I shouldn't offer him anything, but George Washington University was giving him something.
I see.
This guy was on the board of George Washington University,
mm-hmm.
and he hired him. He hired the kid at 50. In those days, that's a hell of a lot of money for a kid.
Yeah, yeah. Where was George Washington at?
Washington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, city of Washington. My son went up there for a semester. He went to VPI and had a Washington semester.
Mm-hmm. I guess we ought to wrap this up for now, but I'd like to ask you just one final question.
Okay.
About your father, your family background a little bit. The Kingsburys, for instance. What kind of name is that?
Kings comes out of England. Mm-hmm. It means... I went to a Kingsbury in England, a town called, it's a town of the king.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they did there. I mean, the peasants probably took care of the horses or something of that sort. I don't know. They came to New England in Dedham, Massachusetts in the late 1600s and made their way down to Pennsylvania, to Cincinnati, and then across the river to Covington. And that's about it. I know a little bit about the family, not very much. That's my father's side. My mother's side, they were German background. They were here a long, long time. Had a grocery at where John G. Carlisle School is now. And went to the German Reformed Church, Evangelical Reformed Church, which is now United Church of Christ. And hardworking people.
What was her name?
My mother's name was Runge, R-U-N-G-E.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was William Kingsbury.
What was your father's background?
He worked for the Woolworth Company.
The who?
Woolworth.
Yeah.
And he was on his way up the ladder. He was assistant manager of a couple of stores. When my mother decided that she wanted to come back to Kentucky. Well, they did, and which meant that he was no longer on the ladder up. He had to take an ordinary job at the Woolworths in Cincinnati and stayed there for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't let my wife interfere with any of my plans. When they offered me a job here to go to Washington, it was on a Tuesday, and I said, okay, I'll get all the Sylvian. Make some arrangements. Said, no, we want you up there Thursday. So I went up Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And we enjoyed it an awful lot.
What was your wife's maiden name?
Phillips.
Mm-hmm. She,
She's a local girl.
Mm-hmm.
Born in Covington. No, she's born in Grant County.
Mm-hmm.
And her family came from Grant County. But she was less than a year old when she moved into Covington. She's been there ever since, you know, on Garrett Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's in the hospital. She couldn't even help. Thinking too much. I don't know. This is, I don't know what really what's in it. The outburst came along with his running mate,
Nixon.
And we knew he was going to broadcast that night. We went up to Cleveland, and we all got out of the train, off the train, went to the hotel and stuff like that, to listen to Nixon broadcast his speech about his wife's cloth coat and dog checkers. Mm-hmm. And Eisenhower looked glum. He really did. And they settled it, though, as we all know.
What did you do after you left Crosley in 61 or so? Was it 61?
That was later than that, I believe.
Later than that?
Yeah, I believe so. I did my own PR work.
PR work?
Yeah.
Did you do work for companies or?
Yeah, I saw them in church. Small accounts, really. And some political work.
Did you have an office locally? Or what?
No, just here. Well, the one thing I did, I worked the highway department. That belongs in there, I believe. The state was getting ready, the administration was getting ready, the state administration, to put a bond issue on the ballot. And they named me assistant highway commissioner, or deputy highway commissioner, some such title. And I was to go over to go to the highway department and find out where all the bodies were buried. When I said bodies, who would do some work for me, work, get some stuff printed, mimeograph and all that sort of stuff. So I spent about 8 months in the highway department with no official duties except to go around and find out what could be done when the bond issue came up, which was for roads. Then I resigned from that. Didn't resign. Yes, I resigned. I had to resign. I became head of the Kentucky Better Roads Council. And that was the vehicle, was to carry the burden of putting the bond issue over. Well, it went over real, real easy. I think I got that stuff in here now. Easy because there was something for everybody. Roads, schools, just an amazing amount of things in it. And it passed, and I think it's the last bond issue was passed in Kentucky.
Did you say you were involved with, when a road was being built and
yeah.
graves were found or something? Is that what you said?
No, I don't think that.
You said bodies.
Oh, well, yes, in this sense. Building a road, lots of times they'd come across the country cemetery. No one in the area remembered it ever being there. Mm-hmm. And it hit a cemetery or a graveyard, family plot. They'd get up the bodies and rebury them. As they were required to do anyway. Is that the one?
What about roads locally? Were you involved with, do you remember any road building locally that you were involved with in particular?
There were, but I can't place any. The only one I can place is that road over Fort Wright. That was insignificant.
Was that in the 50s? Or? 50s or 60s?
60s. 60s probably.
That was when gambling was still, that was still going on at Lookout Heights.
Yes, that's right.
Lookout Heights.
That's right.
Lookout House. You weren't involved with the I-75 in any way?
No. They should have been put together on a different farm than that, but closed up the YMCA, the American Stable went out of business. We went to McNoll's place. Now it's all broken up, really.
Who were on the Knopfler's committee?
Oh, Carol Krantz, the Ray Duncan, myself. It wasn't a committee. It was just a gathering of people at lunchtime. Jim Ware. No, just a run-of-the-mill downtown people. Coppins, Ireland people, attorneys, doctors. Not so many doctors. They're all too busy.
This was in the
YMCA building.
In the 60s?
Yes. Matter of fact, the whole thing started way back when my father was a young man in YMCA. They had what they called the Knockers Group, and they existed for a long, long time in different forms, but always somebody from the old group and then you have a new group.
This is in a YMCA in the cafeteria or in the
dining room?
Dining room.
Yeah.
A lot of names here.
Yes,
This was a group of businessmen and political
yes, that's
people,
right.
Political
that's
people,
right,
and attorneys, and
that's right. Paper that morning that an IRS would be located in the Cincinnati area. Well, we thought, well, the Cincinnati area, that means coming. So we got together a group of people and we went to Washington. I went to Washington to see Brent Spence. He had a lot of influence there. And Spence said he'd look into it. And so he did, and when he came down, we took the general minister office. It's the general, I forgot the name, it was in the paper today. General, it's the federal agency that handles real estate and locates properties.
General prop?
No. General office, no, general?
Yeah, I can't think of it either.
G-A-O.
G-A-O.
G-O-A. General, I don't know. It's in the paper tonight on something. Being located today around here. Anyway, we asked the that department agency to look around Northern Kentucky, and we didn't get much cooperation from the Campbell County people, but we did from the Boone County. We rented a bus and gathered a group of leading businessmen around the community with these officials from Washington. And we looked all over three counties, and we got out of the bus, and this is what I think persuaded them to come to Covington. We were to 4th and Madison, got out of the bus, trip was over, and I talked to the three guys from the general GAO, and he said, where is that I-75 going to be? And I looked. Pointed down 4th Street, and I said, you see those cars? He said, yeah. I said, that's I-75 already. That's there. I think that got it. I really do. Nothing we said did, I-75. And we went to Washington a little bit, coaxed them along. And we got the announcement that's where it's going to be. I've rejoiced in it, but also felt bad. We displaced a hell of a lot of people. Had to move out of there. I've sort of regretted it. I felt ashamed of it ever since. Mm-hmm. But that's where it went.
I think it's the General Accounting Office, isn't it?
That's right, General Accounting Office. You're right. You're right. And
who was involved locally on that, getting that here?
Wilson Wyatt represented the state. And was, isn't it, would names be in there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. Wilson Wise right here, I see. Bert Combs.
Bert Combs, Wilson Wise.
Mayor Maloney.
Yeah.
City Manager Rose.
Yeah. Wayne Lunsford.
Ralph Ridge.
Yeah, Ralph Ridge. I believe he's doing that.
Former city manager and attorney to prepare plans to acquire the land.
Well, the day this was announced, I was in Washington, and by accident, and I was in Spence's office, and Spence, of course, first gets a word for it, and he told me I was there.
Was this was a decision made in the general accounting's office?
That's more right, that's right, yes.
And Spence was the...
Spence was the... he had to have something to do with it. Now, Spence was not a very aggressive fella. He was nice, he was honest as could be, but he was not too aggressive. But I was in the office up there when it was announced. The White House called Spence's office and told Spence that there was to be incoming. And he came out of his office, a big man, bear of a man, the head blind. And he says, "Gil, the IRS is going to be incoming." He wasn't elated or anything about it, but hell, I was.
Are you the one who told the people in Covington then yourself, or did the...
No, I saw it in the paper. No, about that was announced in Washington.
Uh-huh.
And they're down here, they got it down here. But I was in the Spence office on other business when that was announced.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a businessman. I went back and forth to Washington quite a few.
That was when you were still with Crosby then, wasn't it? 62?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Bernie Eichholz. It was Eichholz that did the job. Maloney didn't do a damn thing.
Who were the local city officials at that time impressed you? Was getting things done.
Bernie Eichholz was one of them. John Maloney, he was a dreamer. But Bernie Eichholz, and I've forgotten their names should be in here.
Ralph Ridge.
Ralph Ridge is county city attorney.
Was he a good worker or a good?
He was a good attorney. He was a little bit lazy, but he did a good job. He didn't much want to work.
He didn't want.
He worked as much as was necessary.
Uh huh. Wayne Lunsford, what about him?
Yeah, he was all right.
I heard that this Thomas L. Rose was a pretty...
yes, he was.
A pretty efficient guy.
Yeah, and I don't know where he is now. He's up east, isn't he? I believe.
I don't know.
I think that was an important event for it.
Who was the big shot here in Covington? Was there any central personality at that time in the city government?
Well, if you said personality, yes, it would be John Maloney. But John didn't do a damn thing except talk.
Mm-hmm.
He was a dreamer.
He was all personality, huh?
That's right. State General Assembly.
Mm-hmm. Is that in the 60s?
Yeah.
That was after you left Crosley?
Yes, that's right.
When you were in the private...
Yeah. Oh, I did part in getting the University of Kentucky Center up here, which is now Northern Kentucky University.
Nearly in the middle... Was that the one up on the hill there?
Yeah, that's now the
Chick?
Part of NKU.
Yeah. Chase Law School, I guess.
No, Chase Law School's over on Campbell.
Oh, yeah, over in Campbell, that's right. Did you have much to do with the flood wall?
No. Where was it? That flood wall was built.
You were with the Christopher Gist Society?
Yes, we had a real healthy society at one time, but all the leadership has died.
Who was behind the Christopher Gist? Anybody in particular that you recall?
Bob Tate.
Bob Tate?
Mm-hmm. His brother owned this house. Steve Blakely.
Bob Tate of Tate Builders?
Yeah. His son committed suicide about 2 months ago.
You say he owned this house?
No, his brother did.
Oh.
He lived over two blocks over.
Bob Tate owned Tate Builders. And
yeah, he and his brother, Bob and Bracken. Bracken owned this house. He owned it. They were together in that for a long time.
His brother, Robin Bracken?
Bracken Tate, uh-huh.
Bracken Tate, okay. Is that Robin?
No, it's Bracken Tate.
Oh, Bracken. Bracken.
Now, he owned this house.
I see. You said you helped get the community college here when you were in the General Assembly.
Well, no, I think I did that before then. Maybe afterwards.
Mm-hmm. You, Governor Weatherby and Dr. Donovan, President of UK, pledged yesterday that the Northern Center of the University of Covington, in Covington, would be expanded. The statements came in the response to a visit with both executives by an alumni committee from Northern Kentucky headed by Gil Kingsbury, South Fort Mitchell, Vice President of the Crosley Broadcasting. Oh, you were still with Crosley at that time. This is in the early 60s, I guess, or late 50s. College up here went back in the 60s, early 60s.
We got the promise from Weatherby, and the ground was broken by the Chandler administration. And I remember I was not invited to groundbreaking, but I was there anyway. The lieutenant governor, he was a fine guy.
He wasn't that friendly with Chandler, huh?
Yeah, he was friendly with Chandler, but he was a Chandler man.
Huh?
And as lieutenant governor, he sent him up here to break ground for it. I wasn't invited, but I went anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it was strange now. Because I was close to the Democratic administration at that particular time, they selected this site up here on the hill. Well, I got out of it. And then get out of it. Anyway, when he decided to move the college over to Campbell County, the guy who had the ear of the governor was the fellow over there now, this state senator, nice guy. So he got it over in Campbell County.
State senator of the guy in Campbell
County.
Yeah,
what is his name now? Oh, hell. He's the only one state senator from over there. Yeah, about 2 o'clock this morning, I wake up and remember it.
I see. I should know that too, but I just don't, I can't think of his names.
But you know, after a while I got tired of this all.
But your journalism and your politics kind of overlap there. And, and then with this moving of this getting this university up here, that was a lot of your alumni activities, right?
Yes.
This was founded, the Northern Kentucky Alumni was founded in,
I don't know, but the Alumni Association, like all associations, sometime they're active for 3 or 4 years, and then the damn thing dies out. A couple of years back, they're reorganized.
End of Reel 1, Gil Kingsbury interview.